Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:41 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is February 21st. Well, we had PMI figures coming out in Europe and the UK today, and they were both back above 50. And that has raised the prospect of stronger economic activity, and then also raises the possibility that those central banks are going to have to raise rates further. And we've had a similar type of conclusion reached in US bond markets over the course of the last week or so as well. So UK gilt yields are back above 3.5%. And the fact that I have to move my progressives tells me I need to go get new glasses. Well, when we then look at the chart, we can see clearly here that there's clear support in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's approaching the sequence of lower rally highs. So now the bigger question is, how much further will yields go? Obviously, there was the really big mess in the pension sector back in October that required a really quite substantial amount of money being thrown at it in order to quell selling pressure and to allow those pension funds to meet their margin calls. Now, that issue is unlikely to manifest itself twice, but it doesn't mean that there won't be other borrowers are going to be in, or I guess there are going to be borrowers that will be in trouble the higher that yields go. And of course, then that is going to be impacted by the maturity, the maturity wall. Now, it's less an issue in the UK than it is for, or at least I don't have available data for what the maturity wall looks like in the UK. But we certainly know what the mortgage rate wall looks like in the UK, because there are very large numbers of mortgages are going to reset in the middle of this year. Then when we think about corporate bonds in the USA, well, we can just pay attention to high yield bonds, because there's upwards of 200 to 300 billion in bonds that need to be refinanced every month between now and the end of 2024. So we're talking about a really substantial quantity of debt that needs to be refinanced. And not least, because a lot of the debt that was refinanced in 2020, they didn't go for super long maturities. So anyone who did is sitting pretty right now, but that doesn't mean that every company is in the same position. So the high yield spread now is in the region of the 200-day moving average, but it's updated with a 24-hour lag. So we can also then look at the high yield ETF, and it is trending downwards. So having encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, it's still plumbing new depths. Now let's then just round this out and look at a few more of these bond yield charts. So the Bund yield has popped right back up and tested the highs, and this is still an aggressive uptrend. There's no reason to believe that this isn't going to go higher from here. Now let's think about Australia, where bond yields had in fact been rather modest, or had been mundane really, but now they've bounced again over the last week. So still inflation isn't quite killed off just yet. Now let's then look at what's happening in the USA. The bond price today was down a full point, so yields were up 13 basis points. Now the most important thing here is that it is breaking the sequence of lower rally highs. So until quite recently, it had, at least in over the course of the last 5 months, a pretty similar pattern to gilt yields. But on this occasion, now we're seeing the Treasury yield pushing higher. There's an expectation that the terminal rate of interest rate of interest rate hikes, it could be somewhere well north of 5% and potentially even 6%. And considering the fact that the 10-year yield is currently a little bit shy of 4%, well, obviously then that is something that is going to represent catch-up potential. Now, something that I think is also worth paying attention to is that the 30-year minus the 3 month has the and that's the widest part of the yield curve spread in terms of maturities. It contracted exceptionally violently, coming down from about 250 basis points to negative 100 basis points. And we've had a good sized rebound. Now, I think it is premature to say that it has yet bottomed. We may yet see it go even further into negative territory. But the thing to bear in mind is that if it has in fact bottomed, then that is really starting the clock on the ability of the stock market rebound to persist. And the Nasdaq is coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average. So it was in negative territory in here today. And this is about where, if support is going to be found, it's going to be found within the next 200 points. If we start to see it pulling back and down through the 200-day moving average, well, then we can start talking about a failed upside break. And then it would open up the potential that it goes right back down and tests the lower side of the range. Now, what I find especially interesting right now is that it's some of the electric vehicle companies are among the biggest decliners. So even though Lucid popped on the upside right at the end of January, it's been coming back down. And Rivian was also among the leading decliners in here today. Then we've definitely seen a lot of weakness coming through in the lithium market. I think, though, that that's more a story of increasing supply rather than demand suddenly evaporating. But that is definitely taking a toll on some of the lithium companies. So Lithium Americas was down in a dynamic manner the last 2 days, and this is still a sequence of lower rally highs, and it hasn't quite yet been able to muster the wherewithal to break back above that 200-day moving average. Then we also had uranium pulling back rather violently in here today as well. So coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average, if it's going to find support, then it would be very convenient if it were to do it right now. But even though we're seeing some of the more renewable energy type plays coming under pressure, I think that is more of a response to higher interest rates than any particular weakness in oil, because oil prices are still really quite steady and holding this $80 area rather admirably. And copper was in positive territory in here today. And so obviously, oil was weaker today, and prices are starting to come back down. And I think that that $80 area is a big level. And it's certainly something that will be on the minds of investors because natural gas prices are accelerating lower. Now, it's quite unusual to see prices come down so aggressively, but then also that we are, and I guess we should really look at the very long-term chart here. There are very few occasions when natural gas has sustained a move below $2, and it will create supply destruction when prices fall through that level. So we're certainly in an interesting environment here, where the price has come down exceptionally aggressively and is coming back in to test the lows over the last 30 years. And every time it has come down into these levels, it has bounced. Now, obviously, we have warmer weather, and I can certainly attest to that. The temperature here in Dallas today is about 25 degrees Celsius. So obviously that is definitely reducing demand for natural gas in terms of heating. But it's a globally fungible or increasingly fungible vital commodity. Very low prices will create demand. The fact that Chesapeake have sold their shale gas assets to INEOS, which is a chemicals company, unlisted chemicals company, just tells us where there's demand here. We're also definitely also seeing evidence of companies simply moving in and capturing manufacturing or resource production capacity. So Tesla is also talking about buying lithium mines, and that doesn't mean that the share can't go down. And the company has encountered resistance now in the region of the 200-day moving average, and I think that there is clear scope for the short-term overbought condition to be unwound. And that suggests to me that it's probably more likely than not that we're going to get a downward dynamic. Now, Apple had rallied all the way back to test the region of the sequence of lower rally highs, and now it is starting to pull back again. So this, I think, really graphically helps to illustrate that these technology companies are heavily influenced by interest rates. And when borrowing costs rise, their prices come back down. And that is certainly what we're seeing from the large cap companies, and it's also what we're seeing from those smaller cap companies. So the ARK Innovation ETF has not been able to sustain a move through the 200-day moving average and is quite likely to endure some additional selling pressure in the short term. Now let's also look at copper. So the price is bouncing, and this is still a consistent trend overall. So what it does help to highlight is that there is certainly a renewable bias and there is demand. And certainly there's going to be a lot of investment, particularly in terms of infrastructure and then additionally for defense. But then we have this huge variability in performance between the individual components of what go into batteries. So copper as the feed stock really for every kind of renewable energy continues to do well, whereas lithium is unwinding a very wide overextension. And then oil prices are steady and natural gas is very low. But then there's also a lot of questioning right now about what's going to happen with agricultural commodities. So corn prices are hovering here in a very inert fashion in relatively close proximity to where the peaks were back in 2010 and 12 and in 2008. And then if we think about soybean oil, well, it's one of the feedstocks for biodiesel, or what is now called green diesel, but it's basically the same thing. Now, prices have been hovering here in the region of the peaks from back in 2011 and 2008. Now, if oil prices break downwards, well, I think it's quite likely then that these components for biodiesel will do the same thing. But on the other hand, if oil holds around the $80 area, much less if it improves, then that's going to add some fuel to the outlook for agricultural commodities. So then when we think about the types of companies that would do well in that environment, we can see, for example, that Archer Daniels Midland is really ranging and has been doing so for the last year, but it is below the 200-day moving average. So we certainly have some indecision being expressed here. And Mosaic has steadied from the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and it's holding the breakout from the base formation. But again, there's, I think, a sense of indecision here for a significant number of these companies. And then there's also the weakness that we're seeing in some of the large Chinese companies. So Alibaba is now back below the 200-day moving average. Tencent probably went up more, so it's got some more room in which to consolidate and hold it, but it is coming back down. And a lot of that has to do with the aggressive moves that Pinduoduo has announced in terms of global expansion. and their Temu e-commerce app was the biggest download on the Apple App Store in North America for the last couple of weeks in a row. So they're spending a lot of money on expanding internationally and capturing market share. And that's forcing all the other Chinese companies to spend a commensurate amount of money. And that's weighing on their profitability against a background where there's a lot of questions about the ability of the Chinese economy to continue to rebound when the government is reticent to spend the kind of money that Western governments did in order to get their economies back on track. So when we think about the performance that we've seen in stock markets, where the FTSE 100 had popped right up to test and indeed exceed its all-time high. Well, that's very encouraging action, but we definitely have a short-term overbought condition. So it wouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility to get at least some pause of consolidation. And if it continues to hold the region of the 200-day moving average, then that would be really very encouraging. So definitely it's going to hinge on what happens with oil and what happens with the resources sector. We've definitely seen that companies that rely on Chinese demand, like BHP, have popped on the upside but are pausing now. That is despite the fact that the copper price is quite steady and iron ore prices have been mostly ranging over the last year. Of course, they're not surging, and they're nowhere near where the peaks were back in 2021, but they're more or less where they were back in 2019. And I think that's perhaps the base case for most prices that did exceptionally well during the pandemic, and it is that they will more or less come back to where they were prior to the pandemic in somewhere in 2019. Well, if we then extend that logic and look at the exceptional performance of the S&P 500, well, between 2018 and 19, the price ranged below about 3,000. Now, there's been a ton of money printed since then, but the Federal Reserve is still raising interest rates, and they want to try and snuff out speculative activity. And there's still a lot of speculative activity, and there's certainly a lot of activity from retail traders. And that's really not supportive of the view that, or it does nothing to negate the view that we're still in a difficult environment, and that buying breakouts at the present time is going to be a difficult prospect, whereas buying weakness may be rewarded because I think we're in more of a trader's environment. But certainly the S&P coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average, it does raise the question whether it's going to find support here or whether it is going to then come back and test the 1,000-day moving average, whether it'll find support there. Because if it breaks below it, then that's going to be a really major trend in consistency. And then Bitcoin has been really impressive in terms of its relative performance, but it was in negative territory in here today, although certainly not in a dynamic manner. Although I think it would be unusual to think that Bitcoin is going to do it on its own. And it's a liquidity barometer. So if Bitcoin breaks out, we would certainly be led to the conclusion that liquidity is no longer an issue. Now, what's also, I think, especially interesting right now is that because bond yields were up on the expectation of rising interest rates, the dollar was also steadier. And it's quite unusual for the dollar to be so steady and some commodities like copper doing so well. And the dollar is also appreciating versus the yen, so coming back in to test the region of the 200-day moving average. Despite the fact that the dollar was firm, gold was relatively unchanged and still holding here in the region of the 200-day moving average. and silver prices were in slightly positive territory, and then platinum was up about $20. And platinum, as a significant component in hydrogen fuel cells, well, it doesn't show any real evidence over the last 7 or 8 years to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But it is starting to steady, and it is oversold in the short term. But I think in order to really coalesce some bullish interest around the price, it's going to have to sustain a move above that $1,000 area. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.